American dream. He's just a common man, working hard with his hands. He's just a common man, working hard for a man. Hey, he's a American dream. Hey, he's a American dream. If you're black or white, redneck, funky, that's all right.
Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling. I'm your host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my co-host, my brother, Doug.
Yo, what's up?
Not much. I'm here with Stevie.
Hello.
And we're here with Eric.
Hi.
Hey, how's everyone doing today?
Good.
Okay.
All right. So we got our feud retrospective on Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. A lot to get in here tonight, but before we get into that, Doug with the plugs.
Okay. Listen to us. It's still always going to be Friday nights, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We had to move it tonight because of other circumstances. But Friday nights, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Next Friday, we're doing Fantasy Warfare. Or at least that's the plan as of right now. Listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday, Friday night. Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. About 10:15, 10:20 is Eastern Time, right after wrestling. After football is done, Sunday nights, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Control Chaos. When we know what the next episode is going to be, obviously, we'll update it to you. Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, join Eric Clinton and I for the NFL Hard Hit Show. This Tuesday night, we'll be reviewing the championship Sunday and previewing the Super Bowl. Daniel, do you want to announce your upcoming project?
Yeah. We'll be doing next Saturday, we're going to start our new show, Cell in the Ring. It's going to be the first ever wrestling debate show. We'll get into it a little more when we have more of a plan, but that's going to be a fun thing. I'm going to be a host. Me and Eric are going to be judging. And our first contestants, we know Doug's going to be on, and we got a couple other people. Hopefully, some people can come through. If they can't, we'll get others, but that's what's in plan for that.
Awesome. So let's get into it. Okay. Oh, also, a new episode of Doug's History Lesson will be dropping on the Patreon later tonight. We're going to record it after we're done this show. Listen to that. It'll be on the Animal Batista. All right, go ahead.
All right, so we got the feud retrospective of Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. Obviously, this is one of the greatest feuds in wrestling history. Doug, what does this feud mean for wrestling?
It helped book a territory.
Get into it.
And when I say it helped book the territory, it was basically this feud and the whole Dusty versus Horseman feud to begin with. Kind of helped Crockett compete with Vince McMahon. Okay? Basically what this feud did is it helped keep a territory going. Now, it helped that Dusty was also kind of the booker here. But like you had Dusty, who's a classic baby face, you know, the American, you know, the symbol of America. and all that, you know, the plumber's son. You're Ric Flair, cocky heel, fancy suits, limousines, broad on each arm. So it was classic heel versus babyface thing. And technically the feud started in 1981 when Flair beat Dusty for his first world title.
All right, Eric, what are some of your first memories of this feud?
I watched some of the matches. I watched two of the matches today. They were really good. I mean, I don't have any first memories because I didn't really watch old school wrestling, but those two matches were good. It was Starrcade 84 and 85.
Yeah, and here's the importance of Starrcade. Starrcade was the first big wrestling show that a company was able to do. It was Starrcade was the original pay per view. Even though it wasn't on pay per view, it was always on closed circuit. So Dusty and Flair headlining 84 and 85. 84 and 85 is when Vince really started to get, you know, traction going with Hogan. And so therefore they had to, you know, what better way for the feud to, you know, for them to, for Crockett to compete than have, like, you know, your two biggest stars in your territory, your biggest heel, your biggest babyface, you know, headline your two biggest shows that you're using to compete against Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Well, and I'll ask Stevie this because Vince had the big feud with Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper, right? And that's what they were running the gambit with.
Yeah, that was 84. Well, I mean, it started more in 85.
That was 85, wasn't it? Yeah.
Starting in 85. I mean, it really kind of kick-started after Piper hit Lou Albano with that gold record at the MSG show in December of 84.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, like, you are right, though. Hogan and Piper are in that timeline was Vince's big, you know, heel babyface feud.
So you have Hogan and Piper, which is kind of larger than life. It's not really, I mean, there are relatable elements to it, but it's very WWE type feud. You know, you got a loudmouth kind of Scottish, I guess, with the bagpipes and,
yeah,
you know, arrogant, cocky heel against a big, you know, roided up muscle man, beefcake Hogan.
Right. It wasn't necessarily about, because you got to remember too, in the South, they still believed in professional wrestling.
Yes.
Vince believed here in sports entertainment.
Yeah. And, well, and nothing says professional wrestling like this view because it really is relatable because it's the common man.
Yeah.
Versus the extravagant, rich, you know, cocky, arrogant, you know, flamboyant playboy, you know, and it's the two guys going against each other. And it's basically, it's hard not to cheer for Dusty Rhodes in the first place.
Right. Because you look at Ric Flair and especially back in the day, back in the South, there were people that were obviously jealous of Ric Flair because he had beautiful women and he had, you know, money. He had the fancy cars, fancy suits, you know, the Rolex, sunglasses.
Yeah.
A nice hairdo.
Yeah. And then you had the son of the plumber talking pork and beans on the side of the road.
Yeah. Which is more relatable to like you and I.
Yeah.
You know, and Stevie. Eric relates more to Ric Flair because, you know, he only has to work 3 days a week.
Hey.
Just trying to make comparisons here.
Thanks for spitting them out.
I know.
Problem. Suffering. Suck a dash.
Thanks for comparing me to Ric Flair.
No problem. Although you wish you could get women like that.
So do you. You get women like Sapphire.
He says I can't.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Eric, don't make me start hitting the low blows.
Eric's a stud mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you got two guys like that who are going against each other, and this is a feud that lasted for a very long time, right?
Yeah. They were able to incorporate that into Dusty versus the Horseman. And so, like, they kept a feud going through there. But even, like, years later, you know, WCW's last pay-per-view that they ever did, one of the marquee matches was Dusty and Dustin Rhodes versus Ric Flair and Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, Ric Flair didn't wrestle in wrestling attire. He wrestled in a khaki pants and a, you know, nice button-up shirt. So the feud did last for a long time. Because even though, like, they had a respect for one another, they still were just like, dude, I can't fucking stand you. Because, you know, Ric Flair was the... Everybody clam up. Ric Flair was the, the guy that, you know, he had basically everything that Dusty could dream of.
Yeah.
Even though Dusty was happy being who he was.
Which is realistically, and that's the funny thing about pro wrestling, Dusty's the booker.
Yeah.
So who do you think probably makes more money? And not saying that Ric Flair didn't get paid like a star, but they probably got paid around the same amount.
Right. Here's the thing is that, like, you know, as a booker, and I'm not saying Dusty did this, but as a booker, Dusty could always be like, all right, Flair, a 5 for you, a 10 for me, a 20 for you, a 100 for me.
Yeah. And
I would.
Right. Well, my original question, and I want to bring Stevie into this, because Stevie, I know you're an old school fan. What do you think this feud means to modern day wrestling?
I think it means a lot to modern day wrestling. If you look at it, this was one of the greatest feuds in wrestling history. Because he had, like, Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen. So I thought it was, like, a very attractive feud.
Right.
And, Doug, I'm going to tap you in for a lot of the history and the timeline stuff, obviously. The earliest thing I can think of, though, when these two met is when Ric Flair first broke into the wrestling business. And he wanted to go by a name as Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes.
Right.
And Dusty was his biggest idol. Get into that a little bit.
It was more of Flair with that. You know how, like, in Japan you have the young boys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Ric Flair was kind of Dusty Rhodes' young boy, which really didn't make a lot of sense because they were both born the same year. But Dusty got into the business earlier. So, you know, what I mean by that is that, like, Dusty and Dickie Murdoch took Flair under their wing, and, you know, they would travel with him. And he wanted to be Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes because he saw the popularity that Dusty had.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I want to be like Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty said, no, you want to be like Richard Flair. You want to be Ric Flair.
Yeah.
You don't want to be Dusty Rhodes. Because, like, even Flair was a little chubby at the time.
Yeah, he was, like, bulky.
Yeah. And, like, he looked like Dusty, but, you know, at that time, you didn't want to be somebody else. You wanted to be yourself.
Now, when Flair broke into the business and he wanted to be like Dusty, was Dusty already, like, the brash baby face, like, having a good time, or was he still the heel in the tag team?
I think him and Dickie were still... were still teaming as the Texas Outlaws. I think I'm pretty sure they were out, or no, because they were still in the AWA at the time, because Flair broke into the AWA. Because 1972, him and Greg Gagne, who were in the same training class under Vern's father, were rookies. So, no, Dusty was still, I believe, still teaming with Dickie Murdoch at the time.
Just wanted to clear. So he was a heel.
Yes.
Now, when does this feud start really lighting up, Doug? When does the gears get turned? When is their first kind of meeting?
Well, the first kind of meeting is in 1981. I don't know if that was like their first like official meeting, but they had the match in 81 after Dusty. See, here's the thing. When Dusty would win the NWA title, it would only be for like a couple weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
See, Dusty's recognized as a three-time NWA champion. He's actually won the title more times than that, but the Dusty finish, which for anybody that doesn't know what a Dusty finish is, it's basically, it's when the match ends, but it's really not over. They have the match, like, a finish happens, and it's kind of screwy, and then either, like, 10 minutes later or a few days later, you know, the decision is reversed.
When did that all start? Sorry, Doug.
It's going to be thinking. I don't know the first time it happened, but I do know that they did that finish at Starrcade 85. I'm not sure when the first time he did it. But yeah, no, in 1981, Flair beat Dusty for his first world title.
81. That's when Flair beat Dusty, right? And the Nature Boys thing was already full steam ahead.
Yeah.
And this was for Flair the goal.
Correct.
Touching your tubby right now. So before Flair the Gold, they have the because the territories for me, it gets confusing because, you know, the television tapings and everything, and a lot of the stuff isn't taped too, you know. And it's hard to see some stuff. But with these guys, so what Flair was in the goal was 83. So they were already feuding. And Jesus Christ.
This is what happens when you have company for the weekend and can't afford a hotel.
But do something.
All right. You're talking about the territories. Yeah. And like, here's the thing. Dusty and Flair was building the Carolinas.
Right.
And Virginia and, you know, basically the South, like Atlanta and Georgia, because, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling really wasn't a thing anymore because they were sold in 1984. But also Flair was also building other territories because the NWA was had the NWA was basic, or Mid-South was part of the NWA. World Class was part of the NWA. You know, Florida was part of the NWA. So Flair had to keep going there. It had to go to all these different places.
Yeah.
To defend the title. So, like, he was always, you know, he would work.
Name the place and the guy he was feuding with. Okay. Do that for the audience.
Okay. So
go to Dallas and feud with Kerry.
One of the main feuds he would have in Mid-South, his biggest, I think, rival in Mid-South was actually Butch Reed, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did work with Junkyard, too, right? A little bit. A
couple of times, yeah. I don't know why they never did a feud with him and Duggan. That would have made that place a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And him and DiBiase, you know, in Mid-South. But that's because Mid-South, Bill Watts wasn't just building the territory on one guy. He was building it on, should I be wearing my face mask while doing this show?
It's okay.
Bill Watts was building about 8 or 9 guys. Right. Bill Watts was also, he was building them up just in case one of them got taken, and therefore he already had another guy that was ready to take over. Because Bill Watts was that, Bill Watts was actually smart. If Bill Watts, and, you know, Dusty would also go into Mid-South, too. If Bill Watts, like, hadn't gotten screwed over by Crockett in 85 for the TBS time slot, Bill Watts would have been Vince McMahon's biggest competition. Because their show outdrew everybody on TBS.
Including Crockett.
Including Crockett. But politics got Watts kicked off the air.
Yes.
But Bill Watts had, because, you know, Bill Watts would have known how to book Flair and Dusty. Okay? Because Bill Watts in the 80s knew what the hell he was doing. The problem is that when he tried to take things national, it didn't work because nobody really knew who these other guys were. And then, of course, the oil crisis in 87 in Louisiana, you know, shut everything down.
Right.
But, yeah, no, like, in the territories, it was always, like, you had to have, like, that big feud that would define your territory.
Right.
And for the longest time, even when Flair was part of the Horsemen, it was the Horsemen versus Dusty, you still had Flair and Dusty, like, together.
Right, and it's funny because it seemed like he would go to Dallas and feud with Kerry, right? He would go to all these places and feud with their top guy.
Right.
But then he would come home, or, well, not home, but to the Carolinas.
Right.
And then he would...
That's where he was living at the time. He wasn't living in Minnesota anymore. He had moved to Charlotte.
Right. He would come home, and he would work programs with Dusty.
Yeah.
And that's always what it seemed like. And these guys, it seemed like... You know how people talk about feuds like, you know, John Cena and Randy Orton, where too many matches, too long. These guys have had a shit ton of matches, right? Maybe not on pay-per-view, but at least all around, you know, because they've ran this thing everywhere.
Yeah, you would run the building, but also, too, you got to remember is that also around this time, well, especially more in like 85, 86, Flair wasn't working just Dusty. He was also doing, you know, running around the horn with Magnum.
Yeah. But they were also spin-off feuds of Dusty.
Yeah.
And I want to
get into
that.
Because a lot of these guys were Dusty's buddies.
Yeah. And yes, you can kind of say that about Dusty as a booker, that he did push himself, but who did? You know, who did push themselves as a booker? And yes, he made sure that he was in the... But he also drew a shit ton of money.
Here's the thing. Fritz didn't push himself as a booker, but he pushed his sons.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
But Dusty made a lot of money.
Yeah, because Dusty also knew who it was going to work with. It would not have worked. Dusty would not have made a lot of money if he was going around the horn working matches with Paul Jones's army.
Right.
With Barbarian and Abdullah and or like he wouldn't have made a lot of money if he was working around the horn with Buddy Landell. And that's not a slight on any of those guys. It's just more of Flair was the top guy. And Dusty knew, okay, if I'm going to get over, then this is who I have to beat, you know, or this is who I have to go against if I'm going to get over and stay over.
Now let's talk about Starrcade 84 a little bit. Because it was definitely a culmination of of their feud. They wrestled again in 85, right? Starrcade?
Yeah. Yep.
But let's touch on this one first. Talk about the kind of build-up going into this, Doug, and what got us to this point.
Flair had won the title at Starrcade 83. There was a brief 17-day period where he lost the title to Kerry in May. And at the David Von Erich tribute thing. But he wasn't going to lose. They were going to give the title back to him because the NWA didn't trust Kerry. Okay? But the whole thing with Dusty, it was right, and this is before the Horsemen. This is basically Dusty just saying, hey, I want to be world's champion. Flair, you know, you're an honorable guy. Give me a shot. I believe there may have been money on the line here, too. Like, Dusty actually had to put up money or something.
Wasn't it the $1 million challenge?
I believe so, yeah.
I think it was the $1 million challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The $1 million purse.
Right.
And this is at the time where, to a lot of people, wrestling's real. It's considered a sporting event at this point.
Well, it's still considered a sporting event because more to people in the South. Like, people in the Northeast were starting to realize, all right, this is a bunch of bucket of bourgeois, and you know, because Vince McMahon's making a circus out of it.
Yeah. A lot of people here, especially with, like, the Flairs and the Steamboats and the, you know, even Magnum PA, he looked like an athlete.
Yeah.
And Tully and stuff. Like, I mean, Dusty definitely didn't, but a lot of people thought this was a sporting event, and they thought Flair and Dusty really wanted to beat the hell out of each other and, you know, were really fighting for this title and these $1 million, you know?
Because this is around a time where promos were not, like, really scripted.
No.
Okay? They said what they felt. They said how they felt.
Yes.
Okay? Because back in these days, in the 80s, maybe a little bit in the early 90s, depending on who it was, when you cut a promo, you didn't have to go to a promo class. You didn't have to have 50 writers who basically, you know, got their jobs just because they worked on, like, TV sitcoms for a week or whatever the fuck. A writer goes into the office. So what qualifies you to be a writer for WWE? Oh, I worked on the sitcom My Two Dads for about 2 weeks back in the 1980s. Okay, pal, you're hired. It wasn't like that. It was whoever, like Crockett or whoever, would go up, or Dusty would go up to Flair and say, hey, look, cut a promo on me. Okay, cool. I'm going to cut one on you. All right, well, what do you want me to touch on? Just touch on the fact that we're going to work. I'm going to throw a bottle at his head. But that's basically how it worked, is that, like, just you are given a bullet point. You're not given a sheet of paper with what to say. You are just told, we're working, you're working against this guy next Saturday night at the Omni in Atlanta, or in this case for Starrcade, you know, Thanksgiving night, Greensboro Coliseum in front of 16,000 people. Talk about it. Sell it. Make people want to go watch it via closed circuit.
Which, by the way, wrestling is really popular at this point.
Yeah.
16,000 fans, that's a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and because Greensboro is one of those arenas, and I heard Bruce Pritchard and Conrad talking about famous buildings, famous arenas a few weeks ago when they were doing an episode on a tag team that you and I are eventually going to challenge to a match, the Bushwhackers. And they were talking about arenas that, like, are so famous, but, like, they're not necessarily known for, like, being, like, big arenas, but they're like nostalgic, and you would always want to go work there because they were the like the mecca arena for, you know, wrestling it, you know, in those different territories. Greensboro, I believe, was one of the buildings that they had talked about, the Greensboro Coliseum.
And I mean, and this match, Eric, you watched this match earlier, right? Is this the match you were talking about?
Yes.
So what did you think going back and watching, you know, the electricity, the room, the arena, the two guys going at it? What's your thoughts on the match?
It was different. It was actually pretty cool to see the 1984 match before I was born. It was pretty cool. I thought having Joe Frazier as a referee was kind of odd, but hey, it was a different time. Why was he the referee?
I think it was just because it's Starrcade, they wanted a special referee, and they also knew what Vince was doing with the celebrities.
Okay. That was kind of odd. And then what was the judges for?
Okay, so
are they actually gonna...
the judges were... It was a 60-minute time limit, right? Okay.
Well, I think so, yeah.
If a match goes back in the day to make this, you know how like boxing has judges? And like if you go the full 12 to 15 rounds or whatever the hell, a judge has to determine who wins. So to make it look legit, to make wrestling look legit, especially in the South, you had the judges at ringside to where if this match did go 60, or however much time this match was given, a judge would actually score it on the scorecard. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's... Again, that was their way to make things look legit.
Yeah.
They should do that again.
What do you think of the ending?
The ending is where he... Where Dusty passed out or
whatever. Yeah, he hit his eye on the... I think Ric Flair tossed his body towards the ring post and he injured his eye or something. I think it was the ring post. I forget what it was.
And then they called it because of the blood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Frazier kept on checking it and he finally called it.
That was another way to make it look legit, because again, in boxing, if you're cut and you're bleeding too much, they would call the fight. They would call like a technical knockout or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, UFC.
Again, it was to make everything look legit. And also too, if you think about it, Dusty never gave up. He was never pinned. So therefore, like, they could continue things.
Yep. Commentaries were unhappy, very unhappy.
Yeah, that was Gordon Solie and Bob Cottle, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
it was only those two.
Okay. What's funny is that Bob Cottle, you know, even back in 1984, Bob Cottle looked like a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Is he?
God bless him.
He is?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he was as of a couple of years ago. Unless somebody's going to break something here, I'm pretty sure he's still alive.
Good for him.
But he
should get him on the show.
He looked gold 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But the fans still, even though this went 12 minutes and it might not be the most classic match ever, the fans still seem satisfied, and there was a lot of action within that 12 minutes.
Yeah. Because you have to even think, too, is that like a lot of the WWF matches, even back in that time, a lot of them would still... A lot of those would only go like 5-10 minutes, but they would pack enough in there to where like you'd be like, okay, well, this is, you know, we're happy.
Right.
Okay. But again, that Starrcade match, and this is another one of those deals where it was before the Horsemen, but then the Horsemen would obviously come in 85. And the Horsemen technically weren't even official until, like, after Starrcade that year.
They were official by the Great American Bash, right? Or no?
They were hanging out, but they weren't, like, official.
Because I do want to touch on that a little bit, because you got Dusty and Tully in the main event, right?
Yeah, for the NWA television title, which it was Dusty. I want to say that this is around the time. This was before, obviously, Baby Doll went with Dusty. But then, you know, obviously, Baby Doll would turn on Dusty later on. But I think that was like 86-ish.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Dusty and Tully in the main event, because Tully was one of those roadblocks that Dusty would have to get through to get.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, Starrcade 85, The Gathering. Talk about that a little bit, because this is, you know, the second big meet. This is their last singles on pay-per-view, right? Or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing about that. It was one of those shows that where it was done from two cities. So, like, but it wouldn't be one of those, okay, half here, then half, half here, and then the second half there. It was, okay, we're going to do the first match in Greensboro, then go to Atlanta. Now, everything, like, the fans in both arenas were able to see everything, because they would watch the monitors.
Yeah.
Okay? So, but getting to this Starrcade, it was basically, it was almost a year in the making, you know, the rematch. And Starrcade 85, I actually really did enjoy this show. I've seen it a few times. And they had really big marquee matches in there, like Magnum and Tully, the Rock and Rolls against the Russians. Whatchamacallit? Manny Fernandez and Abdullah the Butcher, because they had this huge feud going on.
I mean, there was a Mid-Atlantic champion, heavyweight championship match featuring a guy that's been on the show.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, huh?
Yeah. I mean, Crusher Khrushchev and Sam Houston, this is back when, you know, Mid-Atlantic, you know, we've seen the Mid-Atlantic episodes on television, or not television, on the network.
Yeah. Yes, we have. And did you say the Horsemen weren't a thing yet, or they were?
They were, it was official but unofficial.
Because didn't they break his leg before this?
The Andersons did. All right, so the prevailing opinion, and they finally broke kayfabe on this after WCW died.
Yeah.
It was always said that Ric Flair was a cousin to the Andersons.
Yeah, I forgot about
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Art and Obi, who looked an awful lot of like, so you would not be able to tell back then that they were not related.
They were kind of related, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there not even cousins or anything?
No. The only two Andersons that were related were Gene and Lars.
Oh, wow. I've always thought they were related until you told me they weren't.
Yeah, no. Obi wasn't related to him, and neither was Iron.
Oh, wow.
Basically, the Andersons were helping their quote-unquote cousin, Ric Flair, get, you know, the upper hand on Dusty. And what actually happened, and I'll get into this story real quick. Flair was working a cage. And he hit him. Flair was working a cage with, I think, Nikita Koloff. And Ivan and maybe Crusher at the time. but I don't think Crusher yet, because I think Crusher was still fulfilling obligations in Mid-South.
Yeah.
So Ivan and Nikita started double-teaming Flair. Dusty, who, you know, had his own issues with the Russians, goes in and starts clearing house. Okay? Because he actually saved Flair from getting a broken neck. Comes in and helps his old rival. The Andersons come out. Ole and Arn. And to repay Dusty for helping their cousin, they cheap shot him. And and then Flair helps him, and then they break his ankle in the cage, and fans were trying to scale the cage to get in there to help Dusty. It almost broke into a riot.
The Four Horsemen isn't a thing yet, because Tully wasn't there for this, right?
Correct.
But Flair was with
them. He was in the territory. But yes, no, Flair, right?
Yes.
All right, Flair was working six-mans with Ole and Arn. So he was basically, they were his heavies.
Yes. And he was there in the cage. That whole thing was with him, right?
Yeah, he was in there.
So, because that was one of the big building points to this.
Yeah. Because he had that big walking boot or whatever made. Or that big cast. Walking boot or one of them.
Cool. You get to this match. Eric, you saw this one earlier too, right?
Yeah. I thought this one went a little better.
Oh, yeah.
It was more physical.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if you know this, one of my favorite matches. Love this match.
That's awesome. Oh, wow.
Watched the show with you before.
Yeah. Love this match. Stevie, you like this match, right? You've seen it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Awesome. Doug, you're a huge fan.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Now we can ask you guys if you think this was the best match of the feud.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless we're omitting, because, and I was going to get into this after this, but I would actually say first War Games match is the best match in their feud. Or if not the first War Games, a couple of the ones that followed.
Right.
Because War Games, we'll get into War Games, because to me that's as big a part of this feud as anything. But.
Oh, definitely.
It seemed, and Dusty got the big win, right? The big title victory. It finally happened.
But then there was the Dusty.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I think it was also, too, you had to send the crowd home happy. And then just reverse everything on television, like, the following week.
Yeah.
But people leaving this show thought that he won the title, right?
Yeah.
So.
I thought he did.
I thought he did, too.
So this was a big deal, but it would seem like the end of their feud, but it really isn't. Even though it's their last singles match. Get into that, Doug.
The fact that it's their last singles match? Or?
Yeah. But the feud's not over because of all the stuff with the Horsemen and War Games.
Right, and like it's their last singles match on like this kind of big stage. I mean, they would work the Bash tours or whatever. Baby Doll would switch over and manage Dusty for a while.
Yeah.
And then I think it was actually I had something. There was like a big article like 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that. Like detailing the feud from like 84 to 86 between these two guys. And there was like 10 chapters on it. This is back when I actually had a computer with a printer. It was a desktop. But anyway, and like it detailed a lot of it. And one of the things it detailed was Baby Doll going with Dusty, but then Dusty couldn't capture the title, and then, like, on his last opportunity to get a shot at Flair, that's when she turned on him. But to get back to this match and how important this was, or, like, this being her last singles match, it was a hell of a match. And again, Dusty felt, you know, everybody believed Dusty had won the title. They did the finish, but it also, you know, made people want to tune in the next week because anybody that like paid attention saw what was going on. You know, when the referee got knocked out, all that. I probably just skipped over your question. I can't remember what it was.
I think you answered it. I mean, this was a big match. And the thing is as big as this was, I feel like it only gets bigger with the Horsemen too, right?
Yeah.
And War Games and all. And probably one of Dusty's greatest inventions.
Definitely, because it involved that. Now, unfortunately, WCW would convolute it in later years. But then, of course, you know, with the NXT bringing it back, and I feel like NXT has done nothing but good things with it, great things.
They have, yeah.
Okay. Especially doing the women's War Games matches.
Yeah.
And how good those
have been. Definitely.
Okay.
But, by the way, we've done Battle Royals and stuff now, right?
Yeah.
Can't we do that blood and guts thing that AEW is going to do now, like, with COVID and everything, like... Isn't the stigma kind of gone now to where they can do a cage match with eight dudes or not?
I think it just got... Well, I actually think that they're waiting until they can tour again.
Well, yeah, but also the Inner Circle and the Elite thing's kind of over now anyway.
Well, yeah, because the Elite's kind of done. Yeah. Well, not done, but heel.
Yeah, the Bullet Club now. Because that was going to be War Games, right? Blood and Guts, basically. That was their kind of way of saying we're doing War Games.
Yeah.
And then that never happened.
Yeah.
Pandemic.
Right.
But the point
that was
is
War Games
still has a presence today.
Well, yeah, War Games still has a presence today. It still has a huge presence today.
And I'm sorry. I love the concept. I love the brutality. I love the rules. I love the matches. That gimmick match would not have lasted the test of time if you didn't have the Horsemen and Flair with, you know, whoever, the Road Warriors, Sting, whoever.
Had to have a heel group.
And then a babyface group.
As the catalyst. And like, the babyface didn't even have to be a group. It could have been...
You could throw just the big guys together to go against them, but you always needed Dusty.
Right. The issue was how War Games did it, especially with the War Games match that just happened with NXT, the men's one. Undisputed Era, technically, I always thought was better as a heel group. They went in here as the babyfaces, though. So.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have an issue with that because I like all of those guys.
Except for Kyle O'Reilly.
But he's actually kind of grown on me because he's proving how good of an asset he is. Okay? So I'm actually changing my tune on Kyle O'Reilly.
All right.
Oh, wow.
But my point is that, like, they need to be heels. Because if you think about it, and this is giving them a huge praise, but they could be considered the modern-day Horsemen.
That's hard.
I can see that, yeah.
I don't hate it, but...
I mean, I'm going to get roasted like a Hawaiian pig.
It's just like Bullet Club is considered like NWO.
Right.
I think that's fair comparison. Well, fair-ish.
Well, yeah, fair-ish because there was too many members of each fucking group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's fair. I think Undisputed Era is the closest thing to the Horsemen that hasn't obviously tried to be the Horsemen. Because Evolution, you know what that was.
Yeah,
obviously knew what that was.
Right. But here's the thing. Like, the only thing that the Undisputed Era have done that have kind of mimicked the Horsemen was that one limousine ride that they took before War Games where they were talking about, you know, everybody says that we're no longer the group. And they sit down to a nice dinner.
Yeah. That was kind of a Horseman style vignette.
But it was the only Horseman style vignette that they did. Because they're not trying to be the Horsemen. They are trying to be the Undisputed Era. which is missing in today's, you know, day and age. You got all these other guys trying to be somebody else.
Yeah.
These four guys are trying to be themselves.
Can you say they're like DX too?
No.
Not really.
Is it not like Raw Sheet? To me, DX is like, who would be like a modern day DX?
I'm trying to think of who would be modern day DX. Can't think of
it. Well, pushing the envelope really isn't as big as it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really, you don't really push the envelope now.
Maybe Rated RKO.
Yeah. When they were a thing, yeah.
But, yeah, so War Games, I think, and even though you later you incorporate Sting, and you, the Road Warriors had their own deals with the Horsemen and other groups, Nikita Koloff. But the catalyst to start off was the Horsemen versus Dusty.
Yeah.
That's what made War Games a killer concept.
Right. And also, too, you could put J.J. Dillon in the match because J.J. did know how to work. But you would also have to make sure that the Road Warriors and Paul Ellering were part of it because Ellering also is another manager that knew how to work. But he could basically – Dillon could take the bumps for him, and he could take the bumps for J.J. Dillon.
Now
– Yeah.
You talked about promos earlier, Doug.
Yeah.
A promo – I think promos made this feud, right? Because, of course, the in-ring action was awesome. Flair, obviously, one of the best at what he does. Dusty has a very good style. I mean, he does. He's entertaining in the ring. Not the most athletic, but he's very entertaining.
Yeah.
And he can move for a big guy.
Yeah.
But what sold you on these matches was the hard times. Hard times.
It was the promos because you have to be able to talk somebody into the building. You have to be able to talk to somebody into buying a ticket to come see the show or buying the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Or in this case, going to like a closed circuit location to watch it.
And
or actually, no, even Starrcade 85, I believe, actually was on pay-per-view.
And it's hard a lot of times, though, because nowadays it's hard to get two guys that can talk really well to sell. Sometimes it's usually, you know, it might be one guy that talks really well. The other guy wrestles more. Like if you got like a Randy Orton versus a Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan does what he does in the ring. Randy Orton could probably sell it a little more on the microphone. Both of these guys, fucking pretty equal, to be honest, when it comes to mic skills. When it comes to energy, the way they deliver their promos, getting fans invested, you know, Flair would have people at the closed circuit things cheering for him, even though he was the bad guy, just talking that, you know, talk. But then you have Dusty, the hard times, the son of a plumber, American dream, you know, you can't stop him. These guys they sold more tickets with their voices than anything.
Yeah. And there was a thing in, like, again, because you have to have a really good sales pitch. It's like anybody that would come, let's see if I can use a good analogy here. I don't even think they do this anymore, but a door-to-door vacuum sale.
Yes.
Coming to your door, and the first thing you, when you open up the door and see a door-to-door vacuum sale, and the first thing you're thinking is, okay, well, I'm going to stick the dog on you so you get the fuck off my porch. But then he starts talking. He's like, I'd like to sell you this vacuum. First words out of your mouth were, go fuck yourself. Well, no, sir, just want to sell you a vacuum. And then he starts saying about, this is top of the line. This vacuum, you know, really picks up the dirt. And then, like, he starts to pitch. And then, like, if he really, like, believes in what he's selling, then it's just like, okay, well, come on in here and demonstrate. Then there's door-to-door vacuum salesman comes in and finds out that the whole house is just hardwood floors, and then it defeats all the purpose, and then he leaves. But still, but the point is that, as long as, like, the person making the pitch believes in what he's pitching,
And then you make somebody forget for a second that they either can't, you know, they can't make a purchase or whatever, but you have that person convinced, okay, I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to buy a ticket to this event, or I'm going to go see this event, or I'm going to buy it on pay-per-view. That's what a promo is supposed to do. A promo is a sales pitch. More history that we have to get into before I get into everyone's favorite moments, because that's how I want to close.
Not really much on history, just more of, again, it was one of those feuds. It built a territory. And that's how you know how good a feud is if it can build a territory and last for, you know, a few years on top.
Ric Flair, it's kind of hard to say who Ric Flair's greatest rival is, because you have this, but you also have Sting.
And you have Steamboat.
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 But by the way,
Hogan to a point.
Well, Hogan's a thing, and I'll compare it to comic books, right? Yeah. You got Batman and Superman basically with Flair and Dusty, I guess.
Yeah.
Batman and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Over there, you got Iron Man, which is like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
So when Flair goes against Hulk Hogan, I think that's the two, because it's the two rival companies, DC and Marvel, just like WCW and WWE.
Yeah.
It's the two. Yeah. It's different than the same company.
Good comparison.
With these hand signals, you and I are accidentally going to punch each other in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I would like to do that.
What, me and Doug to punch each other in the face?
That would be funny.
That's nice. But another first of all, one piece of history I do want to get into before we all say our favorite moments. I know I probably shouldn't be prolonging since we have another episode. But talk about Barry Windham, because that means something to this feud, too. Him breaking off and joining the Horsemen because he was good friends with Dusty, and he turned on Dusty.
Well, he turned on Dusty through turning on Luger. Okay, but yeah, no, he was Dusty's protege. He was Dusty's protege because Dusty was tight with Blackjack Mulligan, who, by the way, is Barry Windham's father.
Yeah,
and it was a Florida thing. He brought Barry in Barry in from Florida after Barry had a stint in New York, and it was basically Barry had even said, you know, the Horsemen are no good or whatever, but again, they made him a sales pitch. You know, you're gonna ride with us straight to the top. He believed it, and there he is. And him and Dusty actually they did feud. And they had that match at the 1988 Great American Bash, which actually was a really good match. And then for some unknown fucking reason, Ron Garvin came out and hit Dusty with a loaded glove. And, like, that was the big moment there, was Ron Garvin turning heel.
Rugged Ron.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know, he was actually... And I'll get into, like, who I'm thinking for the poll for the next history lesson when we actually do the history lesson. But he's, like, actually, like, Ron Garvin's actually, like, in strong consideration for a poll option.
He's heavily excited with that. Obviously excited for...
I like that.
Yeah. I'll get into that more when we do that episode.
It's coming very soon. Before we get out of here, I want to go around the table, and I want to get everyone's favorite moment from this feud. Stevie, I'm going to start with you. Kind of final thoughts and favorite moment of the Rhodes-Flair saga.
It had to be the one of the Great American Bash tours, Flair versus Dusty in the steel cage match where Dusty won the title. It had to be probably the one of the favorite moments.
Yeah, that was amazing. Definitely.
Yeah.
He finally got the job. Now, again, it didn't last.
Was that a Dusty finish too?
I think it was actually – I think what he's talking about is because sometimes they would do a match to where Dusty or where somebody would win, but only win like temporary. So it's not like a recognized title change, but like Dusty could be champion for the rest of the Bash tour, but then have to give the belt back to Flair for television. They actually did do that. But I'm pretty sure I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I remember that happening.
That match, I believe, isn't that on the network?
I was just going to ask you that. I think it is, because the Bash Tours is on the network. Or not the whole tour, but one of the shows.
Right.
Eric, I'm going to get into your favorite moment. What do you got, bud?
Mine's on what I watched today in 1985 when Flair for the title. That was a great moment for the fans, for him. Everybody's coming in and holding him up. Did they hold him up? I forget. But they came. His friends came in and hugged him and stuff. That was a feel-good moment.
Now, I'm going to go a little dark for my favorite moment.
Oh, boy.
And I guess this is more of a Horseman versus Dusty thing than a Flair versus Dusty thing. I first remember seeing this on the Horseman DVD when I was a little kid and how dark and kind of grim this was. I don't remember. I don't have a date for you. I don't remember exactly what it was. But it's a segment where Dusty's driving in his car and they basically jump him. And they're driving in the back and they have like a little camcorder or whatever. And it's the Horseman. Flair's there, right?
Yeah.
Flair's with the Andersons. And I believe Tully's there too, no?
Yeah, this is when they broke his arm, right?
Yeah, this is when they broke his arm. Yeah. They have a little camcorder. I think he's going somewhere, but he parks, and then they get out, and they beat the shit out of him, and it's so real. It's like watching an actual crime be committed, and they got the baseball bat, and then it cuts out at the end, and I remember watching that as a kid. It's like, oh, my God, and this was already 20 years old at this point. It's like, holy shit, I hope he's okay.
Yeah.
It was just brutal, realistic, and wrestling done right, and a storyline done right. So, yeah, that's my favorite moment. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so my favorite moment is kind of when Dusty started going around as the Midnight Rider because he had to be suspended.
Yeah.
For attacking Jim Crockett. He was suspended, stripped of the U.S. title, but they had him as and this isn't the first time he was the Midnight Rider. He had done it before, but then when Barry turned and joined the Horsemen, Midnight Rider went into the locker room and said, "What the hell are you doing?" And then all the Horsemen, including Barry, the newest member, jump him. And Flair and Wyndham take the mask off. But automatically, Dusty actually puts his coat over his face. Because it was actually said that, like, if it's revealed that Dusty is the Midnight Rider, Dusty Rhodes is barred from competing in Jim Crockett Promotions for life. So they took the mask off, but then, Dusty put his jacket over his head, and then other people actually stormed in to make sure he was covered up, and then the camera actually cut out.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It's another episode that's on the – it's late April 88.
I'm going to start watching more of those again.
Yeah, I know, right? Late April 88, World Championship Wrestling. It's on the network.
Definitely. And, all right, guys, this was a lot of fun. definitely tune into our Patreon. We're going to have more stuff on our Patreon, and we're going to have a nice fat Batista episode coming soon for Doug's history lesson. And we're going to have a lot more content coming to the Patreon. I believe you can, I want to look into getting the show on YouTube, because I'd like to get comments and stuff. And definitely comment on Facebook and stuff if you want to see us do more feud retrospectives, because this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, these feud retrospectives are actually very informative when it comes to the feud, because we don't just have to do like the classic feuds. We could do like a modern day feud or you know, whatever.
There's so many I'd love to get into. There's so many
this
good
was actually
I'm down to do YouTube.
This was actually the perfect starting point.
So can't wait to do this again in the future. And maybe we'll put out a poll, see some, you know, some certain ones that people would like to see in the future too, you know?
Yeah, I could put up a poll just saying for a future episode, which feud would you like us to, you know?
See what people want us to do.
Yeah.
I'd love to do this again. Eric, Stevie, I will see you guys very soon. But
half an hour.
Next week.
About 25 minutes.
All right.
I'll be changing time and we'll be good.
All right, guys. This is the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining, and we'll see you next week.
Later.
20 minutes.